Blog Talk Radio.
I bet many of you had sweet dreams last night, didn't you? Yeah, I bet you did. Good news. We'll get to that in just a second here. We had an election last night, and didn't go too well for Hillary Clinton. It's actually a little bit more of a mixed picture, though, than I'm giving credit to right now. I mean, she did that net pickup delegates, but there is a giant crack in the foundation. And the Hillary camp is panicking, trying to fix it. Will they be able to? We're going to see. We're going to see moving forward, man. I'm going to break down the election for you last night. We had some stuff on the Democratic side and the Republican side. We have an anti-Bernie Sanders media bias that's just so grotesque and in your face. And I'm going to break it down for you. We also have our usual, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and their silliness. And Donald Trump is attacking Cruz for flip-flopping. Wait until I tell you what he did wrong, though, which is even more funny. And then later on in the show today, I mean, by the way, this week in politics is just unbelievable because it never ends. So tonight we have another Democratic debate. I believe it's on CNN. Tomorrow night we have a Republican debate. I believe it's on CNN. So if you're keeping track here, we had on Monday a Democratic town hall, Tuesday, which was yesterday, an election. Today we have a Democratic debate. And then tomorrow would be a Republican debate. It's basically every day. And then who knows, there might be some random shit in Florida that I didn't know about. Guys, I didn't even know about the Monday one. Like, Fox News sprung it on us. And actually I have a story about that later as to how that came about, the Democratic town hall on Fox News. There are some details about that that are unbelievable and can lead you to some conclusions about Donald Trump, if I don't say so myself. And somehow, don't ask me how, but Charles Barkley made his way into the show today. We have a story on him later, which is pretty interesting. Lighten it up later, slash not necessarily lightening it up, but there's a crazy, insane, sexist lawmaker in Iran, who made an unbelievable comparison. So we'll talk about that and much more. All right, let's get it kicked off here. And without further ado, we'll get into the exact thing that I think all of you are waiting for, which is the debate breakdown. Let's do it. Debate breakdown. Election breakdown. See, my brain is stuck in yesterday mode. So we had some big elections last night for both the Democrats and the Republicans. Now, on the Republican side, the Trump steamroller rolls on. So he won Michigan by over 10 points, very solid victory. He won Mississippi by over 10 points. I predicted those two correctly. The polling showed that he was going to win those, and he was going to win them fairly comfortably. Now, Idaho, I predicted that it would be close between Trump and Cruz because it's a caucus and Cruz has shown that he does very well in caucuses. It turns out that that's not true. It wasn't very close, and Cruz actually took that pretty comfortably. So we have Trump taking Michigan, Mississippi, Cruz taking Idaho, and then also randomly we had Hawaii go to Trump. Now, I'm very surprised by that. There was no data, no information, no polling that I was able to find on Hawaii, and I had guessed that Marco Rubio was going to win Hawaii, or perhaps, you know, I was thinking maybe Kasich too. But in reality, I guess the people of Hawaii are exactly like many mainland Americans who are bigoted in their own respect. So I find that hilarious that people in Hawaii voted for Donald Trump because it's conceivable that he would look at them and go, "They're Muslim. Ban them from the mainland in the U.S. We don't want them here." But still, he won, and he won Hawaii pretty comfortably. So Trump really devastated last night yet again. In terms of the delegate count, Cruz is hanging in there. But the thing about the Cruz is, there's really no conceivable path forward for him, and this is the case that I've been making for weeks now, and this is the debate that I got in with Cenk when I was on TYT for the Super Tuesday coverage. He only has appeal in super conservative states with really old evangelical white dudes. When you get him out of that, it's not even like he comes in second when you get outside of that context. He comes in like third or fourth. So, we're running out of Cruz-like states where they would lean in his direction, which is why I called him the Rick Santorum of this election cycle. And eventually, it's going to be the Donald Trump show all day long. I mean, it already is the Donald Trump show all day long. But Marco Rubio had an abysmal night. He finished third, fourth. He shit the bed. I mean, he should drop out before Florida, before he gets embarrassed, where Trump is going to probably beat him in his home state. And Kasich, I think he's still way too far back. By the way, Rubio got 0 delegates last night. I think Kasich got about 16. So Kasich did better than Rubio last night. But again, for Kasich, like, what's he banking on? He's banking on, "Oh, I'm going to win Ohio, and then I'll go on a run." Maybe, but not really. Like, okay, I can see that some of the states later on do favor a Kasich kind of candidate, but he's so far back already that what's he going to do? It doesn't seem like it's possible for him to, climb the mountain. So, I've been saying that I've been going back and forth. I had Donald Trump at 80% a few weeks ago to win the nomination. Then I've moved it up to 85% or a little more. Then I said this week I'll stay at exactly 85%. Now I feel like it's ticking up a little bit, 86%, 87% chance to win the nomination. So it's looking good for Trump. He's continuing to dominate here, and I mean the only hope really for the Republican establishment is a brokered convention. So what would happen if they do that is they would want to keep everybody in the race already. So they wouldn't want anybody else to drop out. They wouldn't want Rubio to drop out, Cruz or Kasich. They want to keep everybody in there. And then the goal would be simply to try to prevent Donald from getting the number of delegates to win the nomination, which is 1,200 and something. And if that's the case, and then you go to the convention and he has a plurality, so he's number one in delegates, but he didn't get the required number of delegates, then they could try some weird fucked up shit where they do a brokered convention. I mean, this is what Romney has been trying to get out there recently. He says it's a, quote, realistic scenario. He gave a speech against Trump recently. He was caught whispering at dinner with Paul Ryan. There's no doubt that they're trying something. But if they were to try something in that respect, man, the Republican Party, they're already kind of in civil war right now, but it would just tank them. And what would happen is, if they were to pull it off and give the nomination to somebody else, which seems unlikely even if they try it, well, then you'd just have Donald Trump run as a third-party candidate and hand the election over to the Democrat. So it's a fascinating scenario, man, and watching this unfold, this is like nothing we've seen certainly in modern political history. But then we turn over to the Democratic side here, and boy, what a night. What a night, what a night. So Hillary Clinton dominated in Mississippi. Mississippi, of course, was expected to go to Hillary overwhelmingly. It did go to Hillary overwhelmingly. She picked up many, many delegates there. I believe she had about 80% of the vote or thereabouts. So certainly nothing to scoff at. Now, remember, it is true, though, that Hillary's biggest leads and where she dominates the most, southern states. Southern states have higher African American percentages, and the African American vote has been going to her overwhelmingly in this election. Now, recently Bernie's been chipping away at her lead there, but obviously not enough to be competitive and even make it like 50-50 in the black community. So she won Mississippi overwhelmingly, but Michigan was supposed to go to Hillary. Now, again, for my own predictions here, this was one where I said I think it's going to go to Hillary, but I thought it was going to be closer than most pundits were leading on. Now, when you go to the polls, the Real Clear Politics average, when you go to 538, which has usually has a good track record of getting the elections right, 538 had a 99% chance that Hillary Clinton was going to win Michigan. And you had, on Real Clear Politics, Hillary's lead was 21.4% on average. So in other words, that's not like one poll that's an outlier where, hey, Hillary's up by 21.4%, that's amazing. When you averaged out all the polls done in Michigan, Hillary was up by 21.4%. Now, again, why did I think it was going to be closer than most pundits believe? Because the recent polling showed that he was back only 5 percentage points, and I thought you had to weigh that into account a little more than the longer average because he's getting his name recognition up and he's been doing more debates and stuff like that. So it was going to be closer than most pundits were leading on. But I'm incredibly happy to report to you guys today, as if you don't already know, but Bernie Sanders won Michigan. Bernie won Michigan in what is literally the biggest upset in primary history. I believe the previous number was about 17% or 18%, overcoming that average of being down in the polls. Again, 21.4% he was down. He won Michigan. Okay, guys, this is huge. This means we really have an election moving forward. Now, I had Bernie Sanders at about 40% to win the nomination going into yesterday, and for the past week or so I've been saying he's about 40%. Hillary Clinton's about 60%. If you listen to the mainstream pundits, they'll say it's 85% chance for her. Again, I think it's more 60-40. Now, here's the thing. Moving forward, so on March 15, we have a bunch of elections. You got to call it like it is. And when you look at the polling data for those states, Bernie's down in every state that we're doing on March. He's down in every state. But as soon as you get past March 15th, then it's wall-to-wall Bernie. So here's Hillary's dirty little secret that the mainstream media is not telling you, or, you know, they're not going into detail about it. She's running out of southern states. The southern states are her firewall. Remember, I just told you, she wins the black vote overwhelmingly. Well, she's running out of southern states where she wins overwhelmingly. In the rest of the country, it is much more competitive, and after March 15th, Bernie becomes a favorite in many of those states. So she's in a little bit of trouble here. Now, again, if you had to ask me what would I make the percentages today, I still have it 60% for Hillary, 40% for Bernie Sanders. I mean, maybe he ticked it a little bit in the other direction, but, you know, there's still a bunch of stuff to overcome. But another aspect of this is, how the fuck are we supposed to even make predictions or know what's going to happen when you had him overcome a 21.4% deficit? So, in other words, look, my job is everybody knows my bias, everybody knows what candidate I favor, but I'm a numbers guy, I'm a facts guy, I'm a data guy, which is why I predicted the other day that Hillary was going to win Michigan. I thought it was going to be closer than other people said, but I thought she was going to win Michigan. That didn't happen. So now when you look at the polls for, you know, Ohio, for example, Illinois, 538 even had an article about this. They had Hillary at a 99% chance to win Michigan. They're like, okay, I mean, it's possible that this was a fluke and Bernie Sanders took Michigan and then we're going to go right back to the polls being almost spot on, which usually they are spot on. Or pollsters are kind of missing something. And, you know, the polls that we have for places like Ohio and Illinois where Hillary's leading and leading by quite a bit, that might be just as useless as the information that we had for Michigan. We don't know now. We don't know. And I'll be the first to admit to you guys, I love telling you guys when I do know, but now I have to tell you the truth. I don't know either. So all my predictions, you know, I was 86% going into yesterday. Yesterday I got Hawaii wrong, Michigan wrong on the Democratic side, and Idaho wrong, though not all that wrong because I thought it was going to be between Cruz and Trump, and it was. So I got three right, I think, and three wrong or thereabouts. My predictions were good, pretty good going into yesterday, 86%. Now it's like, where do I make my predictions? How am I going to go to the Real Clear Politics average? How am I going to go to 538? How am I going to look at all the data and get an accurate prediction when Bernie Sanders just showed us he has the potential to override 21.4% deficit? Unheard of. That's unreal. That's unthinkable. So then the question becomes, obviously, Well, how is that? And why is that? I mean, that's lunacy. That hasn't happened ever in primary history in the United States. Well, there's a few potential answers to that. As Adam Johnson from AlterNet pointed out on Twitter, perhaps this is, the debates. Perhaps this is the debate that happened the other night in Flint, where Hillary did end up using some dirty tactics. Certainly her surrogates used dirty tactics when they tried to pretend like Bernie Sanders is racist for using the word ghetto. Bernie Sanders, who marched with MLK and literally protested segregation. You're going to say he's racist? Only if the word racist has no meaning anymore. Or, oh, he's sexist because he interrupted Hillary because Hillary interrupted him. He said, "Excuse me, don't interrupt me." Oh my God, sexist. Obviously, you have to allow a woman to interrupt you or you're sexist. Well, when the surrogates make that argument and they're loud and they're aggressive and it's such a bogus argument, maybe people saw that and they went, "Fuck you." And then they went to the polls and voted for Bernie Sanders. Or, what I think is much more likely, the one theme that happened in the debate over and over and over and over, which I said made it so that Bernie won the debate overwhelmingly, and the Snap polls agreed with me. He kept bringing up her corruption. He kept bringing up the Wall Street money she takes. He kept saying, "I don't have a super PAC. She does. I'm going to represent you." And what I mean by that is I'm going to get universal education. I'm going to get universal health care, going down a laundry list of things that the overwhelming majority of the American people agree with. So there's a chance that at the debate, people heard that and they said, "Okay, I'm going to vote for this guy." And all the polling that was done previously was useless. And then furthermore, you always have to look at the methodology of the polls because there's a decent chance that the polls that had Hillary up on average 21 percentage points, they were just done of just regular people, just, "Oh, Democrats. Oh, okay, what do you, who do you like?" "And I don't know, I like Hillary." And it what they weren't necessarily polls of likely voters who are Democrats. There's a big difference if you just do a random call and talk to random Democrats, "Hey, would you vote for Hillary?" "Yeah, I'd vote for Hillary, sure." Versus, "Are you a likely voter?" "No, but I'd vote for Hillary." "Are you a likely voter?" "Yes." "Well, who are you vote for?" "Bernie." So, there's obviously there could have been some issue with the methodology of the polls, or it was just the debate, or it was something that happened recently where it clicked and people were like, "That's it. That's it. I gotta go vote for Bernie." So, and understand, guys, he's making this a thing. He's making this a real race here because on the issues, he's overwhelmingly better than Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has name recognition. She has celebrity status. I mean, she's been in Democratic politics her whole life. She's the default fallback option for people who aren't political junkies and don't know all the ins and outs of this stuff. But when you ask yourself, "Hey, what is Hillary Clinton's vision? What is it? What's her vision?" I don't have a good answer for that. I think she wants the presidency because she wants the presidency. I think she's power hungry. I think she's a narcissist. I think most politicians are narcissists, but I think it's clear to see in the Clinton family, in the Clinton dynasty, that she's running for president for her. Whereas you look at Bernie Sanders, it looks like a guy who didn't even necessarily want to run for president, but he looks at the country and he's like, "Oh, so many fucking problems. All right, I'll run. Here's what we need to do, guys. I'm giving you what the solutions are. Vote for me. Feel the burn. Let's go here. I'm gonna do the right thing by you, but you gotta vote for the right guy. That would be me." So his vision is clear. It's ending corruption in America and implementing a social democratic system, making us more like Norway, Sweden, Denmark. He says this. Well, according to the polling data, the American people want that. So he has a clear vision. He says, "Hey, let's take our capitalist system and mix it with a better amount of socialism and prioritize in a more intelligent way." That's a vision. That's standing for something. Hillary's like, "I don't know. Some days I'm more moderate and I'll say I'm more moderate. Some days I'll lie and say I'm more progressive. Most of the time I'll say, 'Obama was great. Obama was great. Incremental change, something, vote for me. Ignore the Wall Street money, vote for me.'" What's your vision? You don't have a vision. You're not selling anything. So these are some of the many reasons why she's a weaker candidate. Now, again, don't get me wrong. In Mississippi, I'm sorry, was it Mississippi? Yeah, it was Mississippi. I don't know why I was thinking Louisiana randomly. But in Mississippi, she ended up picking up so many delegates that she net one delegate yesterday, even though she lost Michigan. So you have to keep that in mind. She increased her delegate lead, even though it was a huge night for Bernie because he picked off a state that was somewhat unwinnable in the eyes of pretty much everybody. So what that means moving forward is perhaps he's competitive in Ohio. which again, the polls show him way down, but who knows now? Perhaps he's competitive in Illinois because of the demographic makeup and their location and what he's shown here in Michigan. So who knows, man? Perhaps he picks off some states on March 15th, which seems unlikely because, again, he's down in all the polls on March 15th. But here's what's for sure, and you're going to get all the pundits who are naysaying going into March 15th and 15th and after March 15th. Here's what's for sure. The polls post-March 15th, Hillary's in trouble. There's a real race. Now, again, she's got one, you know, last stand here where she'll get the pundit class on her side and they'll be screaming for Bernie to drop out if she sweeps on March 15th. But after March 15th, those are Bernie states through and through, man. So don't believe them when they say there's not a race. Again, my job is to tell you guys what the data is and give my opinion. But first, the data comes first. Who gives a shit what I think? It's more about the data. I still have Bernie at about 40% to win the nomination. Mainstream pundits will say he's only got a 10% chance, maybe, if that. I have him at about 40%, so he's still an underdog. But, we have a lot to look forward to going forward because post-March 15th and maybe even on March 15th, it gets really, really interesting. Now, do I have time to squeeze in one more? Yes. I'm actually going to hold off for a second on the Bernie Sanders, the anti-Bernie Sanders media bias. I'm going to get to that after the first break. But before the first break here, we're going to go to this Mediaite article, which shows you the kind of what kind of bitch Donald Trump is. There's a fascinating article in Mediaite explaining what happened at Fox News behind the scenes that led to the Democratic town hall on Monday this week. So they explain, the first Fox News Democratic town hall held Monday night had its origins as a planned debate between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, but the idea was scrapped after Trump pulled out of the debate. Interesting, they say. The New York Times reports that Fox executives had the idea, which would have made primary debate history as the first face-off between Democratic and Republican presidential candidates before either party picked its nominee. The Sanders campaign agreed to the debate, and the Trump campaign was very intrigued with the idea. However, before the debate could be announced, the Trump campaign pulled out, citing scheduling conflicts. So the network planned to welcome just Mr. Sanders in an hour-long town hall-style event hosted by Bret Baier as part of his special report program. Shortly after Fox announced the Sanders town hall, Hillary Clinton accepted an earlier invitation that she had rebuffed, and the Democratic town hall was born. Okay, here's why I love this story with every fiber of my being. It's so typical of every single character involved. So you have Hillary Clinton, who was invited originally, along with Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton's initial response was, yeah, Fox News, piss off, not doing it, fuck you. And they're like, okay, well, Bernie agreed, so we're going to go with Bernie. And then they invited Trump to do a debate. And Trump's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I think I might do that, debate Bernie Sanders, why not? And then his staffers, or Trump himself, was like, dude, you might get your ass handed to you. And then they're like, scheduling conflict, I can't make it. I mean, debate the guy who knows policy in and out and can, you know, it. And I can't attack by saying he's corrupt because he's not corrupt. And he, again, he can run circles around me on every other issue. Yeah, busy. I got something I got to do. What am I supposed to say here? I'd love to go and get my ass handed to me, but I can't. So I can't. And then when they're like, okay, we'll give the whole hour to Bernie Sanders, Hillary's like, fuck sure, why not? I'll go. Did I say no before? I mean, I meant to say I totally want to go. And it's cool. It's cool. So the entire time Bernie Sanders is being Bernie Sanders, he's like, yeah, I'll come. Who do you want me to debate? Donald Trump? Sure. Awesome. I can't wait for it. Oh, you want me to talk to Hillary or do a town hall or do a debate with Hillary? Yeah, whatever. I'll talk to whoever you want. Yeah, I'll come on. No problem. So the entire time he's consistent. He wants to get his message out, period, even to a Republican audience. Hillary's like, no, fuck off. I mean, snub me and only want to go to Bernie and he gets more time. Yes, I'll come. And Donald's like, yeah, I'm a tough guy. I'm a macho man. I'm going to, yeah, I'll debate Bernie. Why not? I'll beat that guy. And then behind closed doors, he's like, fuck, this guy's going to kill me. Scheduling conflict. I can't make it. It's quintessential Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton. Okay. Let's take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to give you the anti-Bernie Sanders media bias. Oh, you don't want to miss this. And Donald Trump decided to attack Ted Cruz for flip-flopping, but bad idea because he's even more guilty. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Mal sehen, wie es macht. Will ja gut sein, auch wenn's nicht immer klappt. Lauf durch die Straßen im Winter, verteilt Schuhe und Brot. Mädels und Jungs, dieses Leben ist kein U-Bahnhof. Fahr mit nem eigenen Wagen über den CSD. Schmeiß Gummis in die Menge und schrei gay, okay. Mach was du willst, auch wenn's keinen bewegt. Keiner versteht, wo mit ner Blonden und Brünetten in der Dreier-WG. Seh die ganzen Gangster auf der Suche nach Sinn. Millionen Einzelkämpfer wissen nicht mehr wohin. Am Ende des Tunnels sind all die Lichter getimmt. Und dreht man wieder auf, machen die Lichter uns blind. Unsere Götter sind Freunde, warum sagen sie's uns nicht? Kommt einer vorbei, dann ertragen wir es nicht. Also mach ich mir einen schönen Abend, doch kann ich schlafen, denn wieso oft stell ich mir diese eine Frage? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wie komm ich da bloß rein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wo zur Hölle soll der sein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wie komm ich da bloß rein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wo zum Teufel soll der sein? Will da oben rein, wie soll das gehen? Muss ich sein wie Mohammed, Buddha oder Kanye? Kann die Zeichen nicht sehen, kann kein einziges Gebet finden, einfach keine Ruhe. Doch jeder Beichtstuhl ist belegt, bin jetzt 30. Keine Angst, heirate bald, Brüder und Schwestern. Stell schon mal das Weihwasser kalt, die Welt zu verändern. Alles liegt in meiner Gewalt, für Frieden verbreiten, hab immer meine Pfeife dabei. Seh die ganzen Emos auf der Suche nach Sinn. Doch ich weiß, ich bin für was Gutes bestimmt. In den Goldgräbern hin ist noch genug für mich drin. Mein neues Haus sieht aus wie der Louvre von innen. Vatikan, Tibet und Mekka, wir feiern ins nächste Jahr. Zum Dank schießen wir die Silvesterraketen in Art. Und ich mach mir heute einen schönen Abend, doch kann ich schlafen, denn wie so oft stell ich mir diese eine Frage. Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wie komm ich da bloß rein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wo zur Hölle soll der sein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wie komm ich da bloß rein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wo zum Teufel soll der sein? Oh mein Gott, dieser Himmel, wo zur Hölle soll der sein? Egal, ich liege mir nah, ich liege mir nah. Oh mein Gott, bin im Himmel, die macht mich einfach nur high. Thank you.
of a bitch! All right, guys. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. So many people have denied that the mainstream media is biased against Bernie Sanders. Well, today we have the nail in the coffin for that ridiculous claim. Now, I mean, let's be clear that the nail in the coffin was probably months ago, but this one, it's now, I mean, undeniable. You can be the biggest Hillary fan on the planet and go, something's a little off here. So Adam H. Johnson of Alternet tweeted this out, and I believe Fair Media Watch made the graphic, and they covered the reporting here from the Washington Post. Look at their headlines about Bernie Sanders over just a 24-hour period. And actually, even that's me being too kind to the Washington Post, because technically I think it was over about a 16 or 18-hour period. There were a total of 16 hit jobs on Bernie Sanders. Take a look at this. So for everybody listening live, and you can't see this, we have, I'll give you the headlines. What Bernie Sanders still doesn't get about arguing with Hillary Clinton. The Daily 202, five reasons Bernie Sanders lost last night's Democratic debate. Even though, by the way, every snap poll had him dominating that debate. But forget what the people think. Bernie Sanders' two big lies about the global economy. Oh, yes, he's such a liar. Mental health patients to Bernie Sanders. Don't compare us to the GOP. Clinton is running for president. Sanders is doing something else. An awkward reality for Bernie Sanders. A strategy focused on whiter states. And the most partisan senator of 2015 is Bernie Sanders. Excuse me, I'm talking. Bernie Sanders shut down Hillary Clinton. Repeatedly. Excuse me, Bernie Sanders doesn't know how to talk about black people. Oh, God. Right, the guy who marched with MLK, the guy who literally protested segregation, the guy who has a track record of standing up for the black community throughout his entire time in Congress, he doesn't know how to talk to black people. Come on. Next, this is huge. Trump, Sanders both using same catchphrase. Oh, I guess they're similar in more ways than that, huh? Here's something Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders have in common. Oh. Sweet Jesus. Bernie Sanders says white people don't know what it's like to live in the ghetto. About that. Oh, your snarkiness is so cute and clever. Oh, you got him. Why Obama says bank reform is a success, but Bernie Sanders says it's a failure. Bernie Sanders pledges the U.S. won't be number one in incarceration. He'll need to release a lot of criminals. Oh, good googly moogly. So they're like, yeah, drug war, locking up innocent people. I guess you should keep doing that. And finally, the NRA just praised Bernie Sanders and did him no favors in doing so. Okay. So if you're somebody who thinks there isn't an anti-Bernie Sanders bias in the mainstream press, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. I don't know how else to say it. Now, probably the saddest aspect of this is that the next day, somebody at the Washington Post came out and wrote a piece defending the coverage. And it was the worst piece I've ever read. They're like, well, you know, I mean, come on, guys. Let's be serious here. Objectivity isn't neutrality. Wait, that's what we say. To be objective is to, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're going against somebody all the time. If it's objectively true that they're wrong, well, then, yeah, you go after them all the time. But the Washington Post has never said that before, never argued for that before. Now, all of a sudden, they use that argument when it's convenient. And by the way, they're still wrong in using that argument, because if you are being objective, if you are going by the facts and the data and whose plans would help the people more, you would attack Hillary Clinton with this kind of fervor. And that's the problem. They're like, well, I mean, we're going after him because he kind of deserves it. No, he doesn't deserve it. If you went after Hillary Clinton like this, perhaps she would deserve it because of the facts, because of the facts. But you go after Bernie Sanders for this, you're just doing a hatchet job. That's all you're doing. And notice something. These are all, like, gotcha, stupid ways of trying to get Bernie Sanders. And Washington Post and all the other mainstream outlets have been doing the horse race aspect of politics, and that's mainly what they focus on. Now, think about it. If you focus on the horse race aspect of politics, Well, then it is easier to go after Bernie Sanders because he was not a favorite. He was the underdog to begin with. Even after yesterday, after winning Michigan, he's still an underdog moving forward. So if you keep talking about the horse race aspect, then you just keep saying, well, Hillary's the favorite, 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 Hillary's the favorite. And then you're basically attempting to manifest that into reality by saying it over and over. But in the media, is your real job to talk about the horse race aspect of it? www.fuckno.com, bitch. .com, bitch. That's a new one. Your job is to cover their policy positions, the substance, how it would affect the American people. Hey, here's Bernie Sanders' health care plan. Let's compare it to the other modern nations in the world. He wants to bring us up to par with those nations. He wants a single-payer government-run healthcare system like the other modern nations. Hey, here's his education plan. He pays for it with a transaction tax on high-frequency trading on Wall Street. That would cover X amount of it. But they're not discussing the substance, because when you discuss the substance, Bernie Sanders is 100% correct, and his policies are just better for the American people, and the American people want them more. So in order to distract from that, what do? Play the gotcha game. He told Hillary not to interrupt her. Oh, my God, what a sexist. What a sexist. Oh, my God, what a sexist. See, that's substanceless. That's stupid. You're doing grade school level coverage here. And then on top of that, it's not even necessarily true that they do no policy coverage. Sometimes they do. And when they do the policy coverage, they just lie about Bernie Sanders. They're just like, oh, his plan would cost X amount of trillions of dollars, and this is unbelievable, and this is wrong, and this is terrible. Meanwhile, they always use unfavorable analyses from people that are linked to the Clinton campaign, or at the very least, people who are not objective. So, for example, many mainstream outlets ran with this hatchet job of a piece that said Bernie Sanders' plan would cost, whatever, $15 trillion or some shit like that, his healthcare plan. Now, what's the reality of it? The way they calculated those numbers, it would be as if we left our private health insurance industry exactly the way it is right now, and then on top of that, we did a single-payer system. But that makes no sense, and that's purposefully misleading, because the whole idea of a single-payer system is you get rid of the private system, which is price-gouging the fuck out of all of us and doing a horrible job, and you replace it with the single-payer system. So this is why Bernie Sanders says all the time, you might pay $500 more in taxes, but you're going to net save $4,500 because I'm going to make it so you don't have to buy from health insurance companies that are ripping you off right now in the private sector. But they always leave out the second part, and they're just like, a tax increase of this much, and it's going to cost you this much. By the way, that includes if you keep your private plan and you get single-payer health care. But whatever, that's the analysis. Oh, my God, he's so bad for America. He's so bad for the country. They pretend like, oh, he can't pay for this. Wait, he showed you how he pays for it, for example, with the education plan, with the transaction tax on Wall Street. You might not like how he pays for it, but he shows you how he pays for it. No, it's not paid for, but he's showing you that it's paid for, and you're just ignoring it. It's unbelievable how biased they are against this guy, man. And look, the sad thing is, I don't think many people, they're not policy wonks. They're not big time into substance. They don't have all day like I do where it's my job to break this stuff down and read about it. So they just hear, you know, people say at the water cooler in the office, yeah, I don't know, Bernie's plan, I like him, but he seems like he's a little pie in the sky, and people are not sure how he's going to pay for it, and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know, I guess he's a little too socialist, a little too far left. This is what they're trying to have happen. They're trying to lead us in this direction. And then they have the fucking nerve to come out after the fact and say, us? Unfairly biased against Bernie? No. No, of course you are. Guys, if you really wanted to do a substantive breakdown of Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders, here's what you do. Take the opinion polls of the American people on virtually every issue. Compare Hillary Clinton's position to Bernie Sanders' position. If you do that analysis, it's not even close. The American people overwhelmingly want what Bernie Sanders is selling, not what Hillary Clinton is selling. But they won't run that article. They won't talk about that because that would require actually doing their goddamn job and caring in detail about policy substance. They'd rather do the horse race aspect of politics where they can keep saying Hillary's the favorite. They'd rather do unfair attacks when it comes to substance against Bernie Sanders. They have no interest in treating this guy even a little fair. So if you haven't realized this bias by now, your head is just in the sand, And you have to be wary about what you're reading because or what you're watching, certainly on mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC even, the nightly news, because the mindset from day one with him has been, come on, let's be serious here. Come on. I've seen that mindset before. There was a guy named Barack Hussein Obama, a black guy running for the presidency, who everybody's like, come on, the Clinton machine is going to override Hillary Clinton. That guarantee she'll be the nominee. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? The guy's middle name is Hussein. We're in a war with somebody that has the last name Hussein. Are you serious? Come on. Come on. It's going to be Hillary. Come on. Yeah. And then it wasn't. So I'm not saying Bernie's going to win, but does he have a shot? Hell yeah. Even with the media biased against him this much, he's come this far, which is incredible, and it's a feat in and of itself. So we'll see moving forward. And by the way, with the Obama comparison, don't get it twisted. Obama turned out to be very pro-establishment. Do I think Bernie has that in him? Fuck no. Here's what Bernie Sanders has for the establishment. This is what I got for you, buddy. There's no doubt about that. Okay. Next. So Donald Trump decided to attack Ted Cruz for flip-flopping on the issue of Syrian refugees. Now, he's right. Ted Cruz did flip-flop on Syrian refugees, but there's a little fact that Donald's leaving out, so let me tell you what he tweeted here. Ted Cruz was for welcoming Syrian refugees before he was against it. And, of course, he had a link to a news article there discussing that. What I find hilarious, though, also, is Trump's article was a Huffington Post article. Here's how many other times Trump would use a Huffington Post article and think it's legit. It's just that now that it's attacking somebody who he wants to attack, he's like, yeah, fuck it. Let's use this site, which I would never use under any other circumstances because it's affiliated with the left, people say. But I'll use it anyway because it's attacking the person I want. How long until Trump tweets out, like, a Think Progress article against Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or Kasich or whoever? Give him time. Give him time. So Mediaite goes on to explain here. On a Tuesday in September, Trump said of admitting refugees, I hate the concept of it, but on a humanitarian basis with what's happening, you have to. Okay, so there's Trump's position on Syrian refugees. He's saying, I might not like it, but you got to let them in. What are you going to do? This is the United States of America. Okay. So at least he's consistent, even though some in the Republican Party might not agree with him. Well, the very next day he was talking to Sean Hannity, and he said this, quote, look, from a humanitarian standpoint, I'd love to help, but we have our own problems. We have so many problems that we have to solve. Okay, Not only, so he's attacking Cruz for flip-flopping on Syrian refugees, which he did. Donald Trump also flip-flopped on the issue. In the same 24-hour period. Who does that? Who does that? Not only that, at the most recent debate, the last debate they had, Megyn Kelly brought this up to Donald Trump, and I think she even played a video of it, of him saying one thing on Syrian refugees, and then the very next day, the other thing on Syrian refugees, total flip-flop. He's like, yeah, I don't know, something doesn't count, because whatever, let's move on. What the fuck? What the fuck? The guy is shameless. Shameless. For him, I mean, there's no other implication here, but logic doesn't matter. Logic doesn't count. I don't care about my hypocrisy. I don't care about whatever I say that's a flip-flop, contradicts itself. I don't care. I will override that sheerly by force of will and personality, and I will pretend like it's irrelevant as I attack Ted Cruz for the exact same thing. What a weird political answer. This only proves my theory even more right today. Because remember, I've been saying for months now, yeah, Donald Trump contradicts himself every debate, every time he does an interview. Nobody cares. The Republican base does not care. When you're trying to get the vote of the Republican base, contradictions are irrelevant. If anything, it's the opposite. Contradictions might be a positive in their mind. Why? Because if they already decided they like you, personality, feelings, emotions, I like him, he makes me feel right. Well, then what they'll do is they'll write off all the shit you say that they don't agree with, and the things that you say that they do agree with, they'll just latch onto that and say, that's what he really believes, the thing that he said that resonates with me. The other stuff, he's just saying to appease the losers and the weirdos or this or that. So I said it, hey, a contradiction might be a positive in a Republican primary. They'll write off what they don't like, they'll latch onto what they do like, and then that allows Donald Trump to say anything and everything at the same time and appeal to a wide variety of people. And that's exactly right. It's exactly what's happening here. Guys, this had thousands of retweets. So his fans were like, Ted Cruz flipped off Syrian refugees. He can't be president. Look at that. He contradicts himself. But for Trump, I love the contradictions. I want to make love to your contradictions. Your contradictions are beautiful and pretty. And they smell so nice. More Trump contradictions because it makes my life worth living. They don't care about it when it's Trump. They do not care about it. Okay, more. On Morning Joe on MSNBC, they're going to have some stunning admissions about the Republican Party. Let's listen.
I think Rubio offered the chance for the party elite and the donor class to try to win the presidency without making changes on policy. Same policies, new wrapper, new messenger. The same policies, right? His tax plan is actually a huge capital gains tax cut to zero it out to nothing, which is a big tax cut for rich people, which is the same old policy plan. And it turned out that there was a policy problem for the party on trade, on entitlements, and some other issues.
National security. I think that's where Trump, I think, has surprised the most Republicans by being so far outside of the box on national security. Rubio was very traditional, and he's losing to Trump.
And Joe, Donald Trump's going to be joining us, I hear, in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a problem, and Nicole, you can talk to this. The problem with the Republican Party over the past 30 years is they haven't, I'll say we haven't, developed a message that appeals to the working class Americans economically in a way that how Donald Trump does. I mean, you look at the fact, we talk about cutting capital gains taxes. That 10,000 people that are in the crowd cheering for Donald Trump, they are never going to get a capital gains cut because it doesn't apply. We talk about getting rid of the death tax. The death tax is not going to impact the 10,000 people in the crowd for Donald Trump. We talk about how great free trade deals are. Those free trade deals never trickle down to those 10,000 people in Donald Trump's
crowd.
Bernie
Sanders.
Guess what? But herein lies a problem with the Republican Party. It never trickles down. Those people in Trump's crowds, those are all the ones that lost the jobs when they get moved to Mexico and elsewhere. The Republican donor class were the ones that got rich off of it because their capital moved overseas and they made higher profits.
And
you can say the same with national security.
It took Donald Trump's faux populist rhetoric to get people on the right to admit what is stunningly obvious to the rest of us. Isn't that something? Now, as we've said before, Donald Trump is a fascist in many ways. I mean, on social issues, he's ridiculously off the spectrum. This is a guy who's a xenophobe and a bigot, and he's intolerant, and he's got a million and one problems. Every once in a while, though, on economic issues, I don't think he believes it, and I don't think he'd do anything policy-wise to try to move us in this direction. But he says genuinely populist stuff. He says, I'm not going to cut Social Security. I'm not going to cut Medicare. He says, I'm not going to let people die in the street if they're sick. That actually kind of breaks from Republican dogma, where the establishment is like, actually, we kind of would do that if we think we can get away with it. Trump's like, come on, let's not do that. He always hits China and Mexico. Oh, my God, they're, you know, the trade policies we have with them. We got the air conditioning company going to Mexico. I'm going to slap a tariff on them, a tax on them, so when they bring the goods back in the country, I'm going to make them wish they never left America to begin with. Let's have the products bill here. Now, again, I don't believe him because he has his ties made in China. He does business all around the world. He's a massive hypocrite. If he wants to stop that, he could, at the very least, stop it personally for himself, but he doesn't. So he's not going to fix it when he's in office. But the fact that he's saying it makes Republican-based voters go, that guy looking out for me, And now, Morning Joe, probably because he's gunning for some sort of a position in a Trump administration, he's like, Donald Trump's right on this populist rhetoric, man. And he goes through a list. Capital gains. The Republican Party has been pushing for, we need to cut the capital gains tax. The capital gains tax applies to, like, the top 5% of fucking income earners. Are you kidding me? That's the tax on money that you make for investments you have in the stock market. So that's a much lower rate than, you know, somebody who's a construction worker or an accountant or actually busts their ass for a living. So, for example, a guy like Mitt Romney, who makes all of his money through the market, makes millions of dollars a year, he only pays about 15% in taxes, whereas you could work full-time and you might pay, if you make $80,000 a year, $60,000 a year, you might pay over 20% in taxes. Why should Mitt Romney, who makes millions and sits on his ass, pay less in taxes than you do? Finally, Morning Joe's like, yeah, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we even focusing on the capital gains? Well, obviously, the little guy's going to fucking hate us for that. He talks about the death tax. You want to know what the real name for that is? Death tax is Republican framing and propaganda. The real term for that is the estate tax. It only applies to people with fucking estates. You have to be a multimillionaire for the death tax to apply to you. But you got people who earn $40,000 a year, $30,000 a year, with little family farms who are like, gotta vote Republican so they don't tax me when I die. They're not going to tax you. They're going to tax the estates. Unbelievable. And the Republican Party has been doing propaganda all this time, and now it's all falling apart because Donald Trump's coming along and doing some populist rhetoric. And then finally on outsourcing. Again, he's a free trade. Free trade is always code word for outsourcing. I'm going to take usually decent-paying factory jobs in the U.S. and ship them everywhere else except here, and then we have wages driven down here, and we exploit slave labor overseas. And they're like, why would anybody? Of course they're going to flock to this guy. Blue-collar voters are going to flock to this guy because he's saying, I'm going to stop that. Meanwhile, you got idiots on stage like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio who are like, I'm in favor of free trade policies. I like that. And even on national security, like they said, every once in a while, Trump says something like, yeah, let Vladimir Putin fight ISIS. Whatever, let him do it. And the other guy's like, no, what we need to do is set up a no-fly zone in Syria and get more involved there. People don't want to hear that in Nebraska. They're like, yo, I can't. We got to go take back Raqqa. No, they're like, I got bills to pay. I got kids to feed. What the fuck? Why are you wasting all our money over there? So you know what the thing is, man? It was sadly the easiest thing ever for, as Matt Taibbi says, even a half-decent con man to come along, which Donald Trump is at least that, and just get all the vote for him in the Republican primary. Because they left the door wide open on all these issues. No, the Republican Party has been representing nobody except the military-industrial complex and neoconservatives when it comes to foreign policy, and it's been like that for at least a decade, more than that. All they represent is the military-industrial complex. Well, it's easy for somebody to come along and say, that's stupid, I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to vote for that guy. They leave it open on capital gains taxes. They leave it open on death taxes, the estate tax. They leave it open because all they really care about and fight for is the corporations and the billionaires and Wall Street. And then all you need is somebody to come along and say, I'm not in favor of that. Even if they are in favor of that, which Donald Trump probably is, but all you say is, I'm against that. And people go, oh, my God, I can't wait to vote for him. Mix in that message, I'm not like them, with a little bit of confidence, the Republican voter melts. They melt. So, in many ways, you can't blame the Republican base for the rise here of Trump. Now, don't get me wrong. There are things that he says that are just flat-out fascist, and he advocates for war crimes. He says, let's torture people. Let's kill innocent people in the Middle East. Ban all Muslims from entering the U.S., deport 11 million, 12 million undocumented immigrants, all that stuff, there's no excuse for it. It's totally fascist. And that's him playing on the xenophobia angle of the Republican base. But on all the populist stuff, they're going to vote for him based on that alone because you've given them no other options except establishment shills and pricks like Jeb Bush who are wrong on all the issues and happen to have no personality on top of it. I'm starting to wonder why any of us ever questioned Donald Trump at the beginning of this with the Republican establishment and the rest of them being so shitty from day one. Okay. I'm out of time for this segment. Let's take a break. when we come back. Are there body blows finally landing on Trump? There's an interesting answer to that question. And then Charles Barkley discusses politics and has some fantastic insights. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that stuff and much more. All right, guys, let's see what I got here for you. Okay, moving forward, in the remainder of the show, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories for you. Who am I kidding, by the way? I'm not telling you the number of stories for you. I was doing it for me. So I know exactly how I need to space them out. All right. Shall we go to some poll numbers on Trumpenstein? I believe so. It looks like some body blows might finally be landing on the Trumpinator, even though it appears like it's too little too late, for sure. So The Hill reports here, Donald Trump's national lead in the GOP presidential primary is shrinking, according to a new ABC News Washington Post survey. In hypothetical one-on-one matchups with Cruz and Rubio, Trump loses. Cruz leads Trump 54-41. Damn. And Rubio leads 51-45. Cruz trounces Trump among both evangelicals, 64% to 31%, and self-identified very conservative voters, 60% to 34%. Rubio also beats Trump among both groups. Damn. So those facts are actually pretty devastating. And this brings up an aspect of the race that we haven't spoken about as much, which is one of the main reasons Trump is dominating right now is that the opposition is splintered. So you don't have one single person running against Trump. And if that were the case, it's much more likely that that person, whoever it might be, Rubio, Kasich, or Cruz, they would get most of the votes of that are going to the other people now. So in other words, Trump doesn't pick it up. If you have Rubio and Kasich drop out and Cruz in there against Trump, the Rubio and Kasich votes much more likely are to go to Cruz than to go to Trump. So it is true, there is a grain of truth in the idea that, at least in the primary, there's a little bit of a ceiling on Trump. I think it was Nate Silver who pointed out that he's never gotten over 50% in a primary. Now, again, there are a lot of other people, and there should be hard to do that. But this is, if he has a weakness, this is it, where he has a tremendous amount of appeal to a certain number of people who are really stridently on his side. But then many people who dislike him say, never, I would never vote for him, even Republicans. So that's interesting, man. That's really interesting. And, you know, if the Republican establishment earlier on had consolidated behind one candidate, there's a chance that Trump could have been beaten straight up. But now with all the people still in there, Kasich, Rubio, Cruz still left in there, it appears like the only strategy they might have at this point moving forward is keep everybody in, and all you have to do is try to get enough votes for the other three people to prevent him from winning the delegate count, and then at the convention you try a tricky brokered convention. Now, it probably won't work out either way, and if they were to do that, Trump would run as a third-party candidate and blow up the whole thing and hand the election to the Democrat. But, man, fascinating scenarios to think about here, and I must admit, even I'm surprised by these numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if it was close between Cruz and Trump or Cruz and Rubio. I'm sorry, Trump and Cruz, Trump and Rubio, and Trump and Kasich in the head-to-heads. But it's not even close. The other guys just beat them. So that's some really interesting stuff. Now, beyond that, this might explain a little bit as to why that is, at least recently. 76% of all attack ads target Trump right now. So he's leading by so much that everybody's flinging it at him. Oh, we're going to take him down. We're going to attack. Now, in my view, I think many of those attacks have been totally ineffectual. We covered a story on the show yesterday, some silly right-wing group that attacks him for his naughty language. You fucking clowns. Don't you understand that the Republican-based voters are just going to look at you and go, ah, PC outrage. Like, who cares? So what? He said some bad words. They care more about that than him saying, let's torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. They care more about that than him calling to murder civilians in the Middle East. He said target the families of terrorists. Not terrorists, the families. They don't get no attack ads on that. They're just like, he said the word pussy. Don't vote for him, right? The fact that you're more outraged by naughty language than outright calls to slaughter civilians says everything about you and virtually nothing about him. Although the calling to slaughter civilians says plenty about him, but I digress. So look at this, man. There are some facts here that are sliding against Trump. And then finally, according to a new ABC News Wall Street Journal poll, Cruz nationally is within 3 points of Donald Trump. Damn. Now understand that on average he's double digits when you take into account all the polls, and this is the closest anyone's been. So it appears like, as Bill Kristol said 843 times before it happened, it does appear like we've hit peak Trump, like he was at the height of his popularity, and he's moving back down here. But, I mean, it looks like he built himself up such a gigantic lead and such momentum to begin with that even with his slide, if he's sliding to still being up by 3 points nationally, guess what? He's still up 3 points nationally. He's still up 3 points nationally, not down. So he already has the delegate lead. He's already taken way more states than anybody else. He already has a tremendous amount of momentum. Like I said, I still have him at about 85%, 86% to win the nomination. Certainly the only person that could catch him, and even this is like kind of, sort of, not really, maybe, not really, is Cruz. So there you have it, man. It appears like some body blows are finally landing on the Trumpinator, but it's probably too little too late. Okay. Now we're going to go to Charles Barkley here after I take a little sippy sip 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 of my drink. We've covered him a few times before. He's a mixed bag in my mind. He said, I think we did one or two negative segments on him when he said something silly. But we've also done positive segments on him. Every once in a while, he drops a fucking gem. And NBA on TNT is one of my favorite shows on TV. I think it's fantastic. This was during the NCAA covers, though, I think, that he said this. All right, anyway, here we go. So Charles Barkley was doing some NCAA coverage, and he weighed in on the election season and what's happening in the political realm. And he made some really interesting points. So here's what he said. Quote, "All politics is rich people screwing poor people. Poor people are too stupid to know they're just chess pieces in a game. All the poor white people, all the poor black people, all the Hispanics, they're all in the same boat. They've got no economic opportunities. They spend all their time blaming each other because rich people throw words at them like illegal immigration and racism and things like that. If we poor people ever get smart and realize we should band together, rise up instead of fighting each other, we probably can make a difference. The Republicans always do a good job dividing and conquering. They do a really great job of making black folks, poor white folks, and Hispanics not like each other. All they talk about immigration, the notion that illegal immigrants are ruining our country by taking jobs. We're shipping all of our jobs out of the country." Okay, so two minor points of disagreement. I like how Chuck said, "we poor people." I'm going to need you to go ahead and take yourself out of that category. It's not the case anymore, man. I know in his own mind he still sees himself, you know, I think we all do this to some extent. I know I'm guilty of it. You guys might do it to one degree or another. I think he's probably doing this here. We all view ourselves as like the younger version of ourselves. Like, you know, I still think of myself as like an awkward teenager jerking off into a sock. And he might think of himself as when I was young and poor. Dude, you're doing all right financially now. You see, it certainly appears like it. And then also the part where he says, "poor people are too stupid to know they're just chess pieces in a game." No, I don't think that's fair. Some of the smartest people I know have been poor, and it doesn't seem to me to be a direct correlation between the amount of money you make and how intelligent you are. There's so much more that goes into that. You know, we don't live in a meritocracy. There's a lot of nepotism that goes into that and favoritism and all types of silliness behind the scenes. So I don't think poor people are stupid. I think they're largely victims of a rigged economy, and that's what we have. And to his credit, the rest of his comment here kind of says that also. And what he's pointing out is a classic theory on class that basically explains how the rich rig the system in their favor, and then they make the middle class and the poor scapegoat each other. So, you know, you might go talk to a middle class Republican person, and who do they blame for all their woes and why they're not really rich? You know, goddamn black people who take my money through unemployment and welfare, and all my taxes going to that. Goddamn lazy bastards, why don't you get a job? You know, or, like he said, undocumented immigrants. You make middle-class people hate poor people, and poor people hate middle-class people, and poor people hate poor people, and middle-class people hate other middle-class people. And then, meanwhile, what's happening? The rich are running out the back door with all the fucking money. How many people, yeah, if we only get the damn Mexicans out of the country, everything would be great. Well, you know, we know what happens when you do that. There was a law in either a town or a city in, I think it was Alabama. Vice News did a great piece on this, and they just flat out kicked out all the undocumented immigrants. What happened? Like a few weeks later, the business owners were like, oh my God, what the fuck have we done? Oh, we fucked up big time. Can we bring them back? Bring them back, bring them back, bring them back. Everybody else is not doing the work, and if they do the work, they do it much shittier than the other guys. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, the real answer here is to do amnesty, get a deal. I'm fine with border protection also, but yeah, give people, as long as they're not criminals, give them citizenship, and then make it so everybody gets a living wage at the bare minimum, right? That's the answer. But you, do you need people like that to do the work that others won't do? Yes, that's been proven. It's been proven. But this is what happens. You have scape, blame the other. Blame people who are worse off on the economic ladder than you are for all your problems. It's not the minimum wage worker or person who's working for less than minimum wage that's ruining your chance at success and ruining your quality of life. It's just not the case. What you have is, in Washington, you have lobbyists, you have Wall Street, you have billionaires, you have multinational corporations. They give money to the politicians to run their campaigns. Then when the politicians get elected, they turn around and it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. You gave me money, so now I will, you know, basically take tax dollars, rob it from the American people, and give it to you in the form of corporate welfare, in the form of subsidies, in the form of tax loopholes, in the form of letting you get away with putting all your money in corporate inversions and going to Bermuda and the Cayman Islands and using tax havens. Isn't it funny how if you don't pay your taxes, you're a tax cheat. You're doing tax avoidance, and your punk ass goes to jail. If a corporation or a rich person does it, they're using a tax haven. Doesn't it sound lovely? As I think Bill Maher said, it's like their money's getting a tan. Like it's laying on the beach. What do you mean? It's just a haven. I'm not breaking the law. It's a tax haven. No, you're dodging your fucking taxes. If a middle-class person does it, they go to jail. If you do it and you're a millionaire or billionaire, you run a big corporation, you get a pat on the back and a team of lawyers, and you got friends in Washington who you sip cocktails with. So the problem is they've rigged the system in their favor. Look at the Wall Street bailout. So they made horrendous business decisions, crashed their companies, took the U.S. economy with it, and then what happens? Their buddies in Washington rush in, give them billions of dollars, no strings attached, and actually that's not true, it's trillions of dollars when all was said and done. No strings attached, and they go right back to doing what they were doing before. So they can fail, crash their bankrupt their companies, crash the economy, and then Washington saves them no matter what. Think, does it work like that for middle-class people? The local dry cleaner, if he goes under, does Harry Reid rush in with a bucket of cash and say, here you go, buddy, you're good, don't worry, we got your back, we're looking out for you, a normal person, the average Joe. No, if your fucking local deli or a dry cleaner, whatever business goes under, it goes under. It's capitalism for you, socialism for the rich. And that's what we call corporatism. It's socialism for the rich. It's tax money that's stolen from the middle class and the poor and given to the rich in the forms that we were just discussing. So he's right. Look, if you're middle class, if you're poor, I don't care what, you know, background you are, ethnicity you are, race, religion, whatever. The problem is not your fellow middle class and poor people. They're struggling to get by just like you. They're busting their ass just like you. And the problem isn't even all rich people. That would be unfairly demonizing all rich people. Plenty of rich people, you know, do noble things for a living, and they deserve their money, and they earn their money. It's the donor class, as we call it. The billionaires, the multinational corporations, the people who pay the politicians to do their bidding as the politicians ignore the will of the American people and steal our democracy and make it an oligarchy or a plutocracy. So the problem is the donor class, certain rich people who've rigged the system in their favor as they make the poor and the middle class fight each other. That's the problem, and Charles Barkley is 100% right in pointing it out. Okay. All right, let me move along here to the drug war. We got a really interesting story on that. We have some great news to report on the issue of the drug war. It turns out that liberals were correct all along here. So the Independent reports, the legalization of marijuana in a small number of U.S. states has had a bonus side effect, hurting the pockets of the Mexican drug cartels who illegally supply much of the drug to the country. The U.S. Border Patrol reported nearly a 9% decrease in marijuana seizures in 2015 from 2014. Colorado, Oregon, and Washington have all legalized recreational marijuana, and 18 states have legalized medical marijuana, allowing people to a safer alternative to buy than on the black market. 2 or 3 years ago, a kilogram of marijuana was worth $60 to $90, a Mexican marijuana grower told NPR. Quote, but now they're paying us $30 to $40 a kilo. It's a big difference. If the U.S. continues to legalize pot, they'll run us into the ground. The Drug Enforcement Administration said the cartels also struggle to match the quality of the pot that's grown in the U.S. That is exactly what we've all been saying would happen for years now. I mean, think about it. If you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, well, then you have an entire new market in the U.S. and an entire new legal industry in the U.S. So naturally, you're going to have growing operations in the U.S. You're going to have sellers in the U.S. You're going to start doing everything here. And when you do that, you can make a higher quality product at a lower cost, and that would put out of business the vicious Mexican drug cartels. Isn't it amazing that they've been trying a military approach for years and years and years and years, and it hasn't worked? It's only made the problem worse. But the second they go in the other direction and they're like, okay, let's legalize it in some states, and again, this isn't at a federal level. They haven't done anything at a federal level yet to really push us in the right direction. But the second they decided at the state level, okay, let's legalize here, legalize there, some places have medical marijuana, well, even moving in the right direction, 2%, 3%, makes it so that there's a 9% drop in seizures from the DEA, and you're hurting the drug business that the Mexican cartels are engaging in. The growers are like, we can't make any fucking money off this stuff anymore, and they've only legalized in a few states there. Again, why? Because now you have growing operations in the U.S., now you have sellers in the U.S. Would you rather go to a legitimate store where there's regulation and where it's clean and nice, or would you rather, you know, meet somebody behind a Taco Bell near a dumpster, some random person who you just met a few weeks ago and who's a shady character who wants to sell you some weed and you don't even know what the fuck is really in it? I mean, obviously you're going to want to go to the legitimate place of business, even if you end up paying a little bit more, and in many cases they're not even paying a little bit more. So there you have it, man. You have exactly what the liberals have been saying for years now is what is unfolding. When you legalize, tax, and regulate, you put the black market out of business. And this isn't a surprise. Look at what happened with alcohol prohibition. What, you think drug prohibition, marijuana prohibition is not akin to that? It's exactly akin to that. What happened with alcohol prohibition is, okay, you banned alcohol. Well done. The mafia came in, took over, controlled the alcohol market. They were on the black market, and they got incredibly rich and incredibly powerful because you handed them a monopoly. When you legalize it again and tax it and regulate it, you get revenue for the state, you get a safer product, and you put the mafia out of fucking business. The same thing is going to happen with the Mexican drug cartels. They want drugs to remain illegal. Put them out of business. Let's legalize, tax, and regulate on a federal level. And on top of all these positive things, you also get the added benefit of freedom, letting people do whatever they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody else. And I get it. There are hard drugs that, you know, lead to addiction in many cases. I feel for those people, which is why I don't want them locked up in a jail cell. If people have genuine issues, they should be able to go to a rehab, you know, get medical treatment. So, you know, don't take it away from the 80% of safe users because 20% can't handle it or they have an issue. Give the 20% help and let the 80% do whatever they want. This isn't that hard to figure out, and what's so frustrating about it is we're moving in the right direction, but we're going at a snail's pace. We got to speed up because we know what the right answer is. Okay. All right, now let's go to some gay rights issues. A Tennessee school board is giving serious consideration to banning all after-school clubs to snub gay people. It's such a sad story. So a raw story in the New Civil Rights Movement report here. The Franklin County School Board will be meeting next week to address the future of the Gay Straight Alliance at Franklin County High School that has roiled the community since it first met in January. Among the possible solutions, dropping all non-academic after-school clubs in order to remain in compliance with federal equal access laws. Oh, that's rich. So what they're saying is, hey, this might violate some federal laws on discrimination and equality. So if we really are super against this Gay Straight Alliance Club, what we can do is ban all non-academic related after-school clubs, and then we're being equal, and we're shutting everybody down. Because, you know, fuck those gays. Am I right? Am I right? 2016. Tennessee's like, we gotta go after these gays, man. They're taking over the county and whatnot. This ain't right. I don't want my kid being no homosexual. A Gay Straight Alliance? What does that mean? They doing all types of freaky stuff with dildos and whatnot in that room? No, it's a Gay Straight Alliance. It's a political club. It's saying, hey, we're in favor of equality and justice, and you're a minority, but don't worry, we got your back. I don't know about this. This don't look good to me. This don't look right. This violates my Christian beliefs. And there was, on Facebook, a lot of the parents went in on this, and a lot of them were like, it's unbelievable, man. This violates my Christianity, my religion. This isn't right. So the parents of the kids, they went as far. One of them went as far as to compare the Gay Straight Alliance group to ISIS. They were like, well, you know, this is a slippery slope. You got the Gay Straight Alliance group. Well, none of us want that. That ain't right, man. We're not in favor of these kinds of deviant activities. But why not an ISIS group next? Am I right? ISIS. This is like an ISIS group. No, the Gay Straight Alliance group is not like ISIS. And what's the massive irony? Now, granted, ISIS is far more anti-gay, and there's no real comparison here because they kill gays, right? But who's more in agreement with ISIS? Well, you guys are anti-gay. They're anti-gay, way more anti-gay, admittedly. But your mindset is much more like them than the kids who are standing up for equality and tolerance and justice and freedom. This is unbelievable. In 2016, just to snub gay people, the Gay Straight Alliance, they're like, let's maybe ban all after-school clubs. Okay, there was a great thing I saw yesterday on Twitter. It said something along the lines of, telling somebody they can't get married because you're anti-gay is like telling somebody they can't have a donut because you're on a diet. It's got nothing to do with you. Doing whatever they want. They're not hurting anybody else. Nobody's saying, hey, we have gay marriage now, and Steve, I know you're straight, but go blow Glenn. That's not a thing. We're not forcing people to get married to people they don't want to get married to. It's letting people do whatever they want as long as they're not hurting anybody. They're not hurting anybody. You're making it up if you say you're hurt. You're trying to oppress them as you say they're oppressing you. You're trying to victimize them as you say they're victimizing you. You want to force your religion on them. They don't believe it. They don't buy it. Or they have a different interpretation of the religion. Okay, so you guys are the problem. You guys are the fundamentalists. And you think you're more enlightened. And you think you're standing up for morality by banning this club. It's the exact opposite. The club is moral and ethical and righteous and just. And you're the bad guys. Okay. Let me do one more here. By the way, another debate tonight, so you guys got to take a look-see. I'll live tweet it, of course. I think it's at 9 o'clock on CNN. It's the another Democratic debate. A conservative lawmaker in Iran made an ass of himself on election night. The LA Times reports here. Nader Quasipur gave a fiery victory speech after winning re-election as a member of parliament representing the city of Urmia. But at one point, he said the following, quote, "Parliament is not the place for donkeys," oh, you don't say, "and monkeys and women." Oh, boy. So reformist newspapers in Iran reported on this, and there was some backlash. He went on to give a half-assed apology. You know how that goes when, yeah, I'm sorry you don't like what I said, as opposed to like, yeah, no, I shouldn't have said it. It's fucked up. You know he believes it. If you go that far in your original comment, no apology is going to make people go, no, you know, I think that guy's pro-woman. I think he's on the side of women. What do you guys think? Feminist in training here. Am I right? So in the election, women won 14 of 290 seats in Iran's parliament, and that's an increase from the 9 seats held by women before. Now, I also have to add this massive caveat, though, which is so expected in many ways, that what they did in Iran here, or what they typically do, it's kind of like a Fox News trick. You know how Fox News always invites on black people to bash other black people and hate on black people, or they invite on women who are like, yeah, feminism's stupid, or don't other women suck? It's the oldest trick in the book from conservative outlets and far-right, you know, entities. Well, here you have in Iran's parliament, they're like, yeah, the women candidates who we're going to allow to run in the first place are all going to be super anti-woman. So most, if not all, of these women are of that mindset. Again, that's not surprising, but you have to keep everything in perspective. Iran has a trillion and one problems, but they're no Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the most extreme, the most far right. They have a Wahhabi system of government, a Salafi system of government. That's why analysts have rightly said this is the ISIS that made it, and they are one of our top allies in the region. Iran is also an Islamist Shia theocracy. It's horrific in a trillion and one ways, but they're actually not as extreme as Saudi Arabia. And on average, the age in Iran is young. And since it's young, you have people who are more secular, more liberal, not really buying what the old-ass fundamentalist government is selling. And so there's plenty of hope for the future. But you still have people like this. This guy is such an idiot. You know, what exactly did he say? Donkeys, monkeys, and women. I don't want them in parliament. That is the most offensive, obviously incorrect way of viewing women, and yes, you're comparing donkeys to them. Yes, you're comparing monkeys to them. Meanwhile, I love the irony of this. Here's a guy who's like, yes, the reason I'm comparing them is because they're obviously inferior and they're stupid. No, but this comment is stupid. If anything, you're showing that you have much more in common with a donkey or a monkey than your average woman does. If you're comparing females to donkeys and monkeys, you're the stupid one. But that's the thing. He has to assert his superiority and, you know, how great he is, because he actually probably feels insecure deep down, and he gets a sense that, yeah, these women will probably run the country better than me because I'm a jack-off and I'm an idiot. But, yeah, no, they're like monkeys and they're like donkeys. I'm totally smart, though, which is why I just compared women to donkeys and monkeys. Okay. I'm done, guys. Debate tonight. Check it out on CNN, I think at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Love all you. And we'll be back tomorrow for another awesome, I was going to say episode, but that doesn't sound right for the show. For another awesome show. All right, everybody have a good one. Peace.